I can't say enough about the I3s, the Judy Mowat. I don't want to single them out, but Judy Mowat, Judy Mowat produced a lot of her stuff, the Black Woman album. Marcia Griffiths is a great artist. Rita Marley is a brilliant person in terms of holding her situation together. And I'm trying to think, a lot of Cuban artists that that politically I don't know that much about, but Benny Moré out of Cuba, I've been listening to him quite a bit recently. And Gil Scott-Heron, I can't mention him enough because he is maybe one of the most brilliant artists that ever walked the earth, you know what I mean? And I love Gil Scott-Heron. I met him in 1976 and stayed in contact with him as much as I could. And he, his former wife, Brenda Sykes, is a cousin of my Uncle Prentice's Rose, my Aunt Rose. So every time I used to see Gil Scott-Heron, I'd say, "What's happening, cuz?" You know, and we would always laugh about that. But, yeah, Gil Scott-Heron, I think we definitely need to keep his music alive. And coming out of he was born in the United States. His father was born in Jamaica, and he has relatives up here in Toronto. So I know many of his relatives. I never can forget Gil Scott-Heron.
Thank you. Tim and I have like a tag team question. I'm gonna set the stage for this question, and then Tim's gonna actually ask the question. But I was just thinking, Brother Norman, that when you look at the relationship that whites and white corporations have had with black music, it has been an extremely exploitative one. Whether it's Elvis Presley, and him exploiting, music from the relationship with jazz and looking at even, and it, the ironic thing is, Norman, is that you would have white folks, going to places like the Cotton Club, to go be regaled by vastly talented, black artists, and dancers. But at the same time, these black people, these Africans, could not even sit in those same clubs that they were entertained. They had to go someplace else. They had to go someplace else to entertain. They had to go. They had to be kept in the back of the venue, in the kitchen and so forth. And that's the ironic thing is that these white folks. It seems like these white folks had no. It's just the hypocrisy. They just a bunch of damn. Hypocrites and I could go on and on, in terms of the treatment that our ancestors, went through, in the early 20th century and before. And so, the question that I'm going to turn over to Tim, has to do with that, has to do with looking at, you identifying the start of where you would say when whites really began to monetarily profit from black music. And Tim, would you want to?
Yeah, and when they really began to seize control of the African music industry here in the United States.
I think, first of all, I wanted to mention Duke Ellington. I should have mentioned Duke Ellington as one of our greats, but Duke Ellington had to have a white manager. When I say he had to have a white manager, I think he basically said that, or theoretically people have basically said that had he not had the white manager, he wouldn't have got the exposure that he got. Louis Armstrong had to have a white manager in order to to do what he did. But I think that from the get go, from the beginning of the music industry, the African music has been exploited, you know, and that started when the recording industry started, and there has been an exploitive relationship with Chess Records, you know, all of those blues artists. The Chess Brothers were I think they're originally out of Poland and Polish backgrounds. I remember I did a panel one time in Toronto, and there was a Jewish dude on the panel with me, and he basically was a very progressive guy. And we saw this film about Stax Record, and he was basically saying, he basically told me quietly, he says, you know, he said, I know you're a radical. He said, but let me handle this. Since I'm Jewish, let me handle this situation. And he talked about, he said, you look at Leonard Feather's teeth, and you look at the way he did, and look at the artists, the way they were treated. And he talked about how they basically... and not because Leonard Feather was Jewish, but the whole capitalist thing, they basically exploited us. The whole situation with Clive Davis and Arista Records. So CBS before that, you know, Clive Davis made a deal with, I guess he made a deal with Stax Records. He made a deal with Philadelphia International. And they came out on top of those situations. Dick Griffey, the late, great Dick Griffey, he left America and moved to Ghana and basically said he didn't want to deal with the whole corporate thing because they basically – Dick Griffey was worth maybe $100 million at one point. He didn't die broke. I don't want to say that, but – he basically was forced out of the music industry because they basically told him he wasn't selling enough records at that particular time. And he was the guy who told me, he says that every year for the Whispers Christmas album, I think he said he got maybe, I don't know, millions of dollars just off of one Christmas album. But the problem is that... the capitalists always control in the final analysis. They've come out on top on our music, and when it started, I think it started as soon as the music industry started, but it really picked up in the in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, when Clive Davis made the deals with Philadelphia International and Stax Records and so on and so forth. I think that's my analysis.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. What are your thoughts? Okay, since we're talking about exploitation, you know, you being a very prideful African, and your history, you know, speaks for itself. What are your thoughts about the current realm of what we see on TV, whether it's, you know, BET, MTV, VH1, all owned by Viacom, of course. You know, any of the corporate urban radio stations, whether it's Hot 97 in New York or, you know, Q in Seattle, you know, any of these corporate radio stations that play hip-hop, what are your thoughts as an elder African, prideful elder African, what are your thoughts with corporate-backed hip-hop today, and when you see these young brothers and sisters who perhaps really don't understand the scope of how they're being exploited, how they're being, ushered along like modern day minstrels and sambos and Jezebels, you know, only to profit, you know, large, you know, white mega media corporations. You know, so what is your thought about hip hop and the corporate artists that you see today?
Well, first of all, I don't really talk about this too much, but I don't even own a TV, so I spent about 8 months in Los Angeles recently, so I got a chance to watch a lot of Scandal and all that kind of stuff. But I watched some of the videos. I blame the record industry mostly for that situation, because a lot of these guys, these hip hop artists, they want to get paid. And they are willing, I guess, to do the coon thing in order to get paid. But I think that the situation with the record companies is that they basically exploit that, and it really takes a lot to be independent. You know, like there's a group called The Coup. I've always liked The Coup. But, you know, I guess Boots Riley is, we're dealing with a whole different generation in terms of Boots age-wise. He's not, a young cat anymore. But I feel sorry for those, for the buffoon thing. But I feel sorry for them, because it's almost, they've taken us back to Step and Fetch It was, I think, when Step and Fetch It passed away, he might have been in the Nation of Islam, you know, so... a lot of these, if the joke is not on, I have a problem with comedians that make fun of our own people. I'm a Richard Pryor, Paul Mooney type of person, you know what I mean? If you make the oppressor the joke, I'm in love with that. But I think that a lot of the young rappers are in a situation where it's demeaning. But like I say, I don't completely blame them, and I know a lot of people would get mad at me for saying that. But I blame the imperialist capitalist system for putting us in a situation where some of us have to do that in order to earn a living, which is why we have to try to create a whole new society for Africans and all oppressed people.
Thank you, Norman. This is Tim again. My next question actually piggybacks off of what you just said about that improved and new society. And specifically, I wanted to ask, how can Africans, both African musicians and African people who listen to African music, African people as a whole, how can they reclaim not only just their music, but the distribution, everything from the distribution of their music, the control over the ownership of that music, and the images that music features?
Well, I think the internet offers an opening. The major record companies are basically either unable or unwilling to promote us. And if we want to have, you know, we have to cut out the middleman and learn about the business of music. Like when we were out there in the beginning, a lot of us didn't know anything about, you know, the music, the business part of it. You know, there were a few people like Curtis Mayfield, Ray Charles, Brooke Benton, and other women that, you know, knew about publishing. But I think that the younger people need to know about publishing and need to know about the new technology. Cut the middleman out and try to control. Like Chuck D talked about, trying to control as much of yourself as you can. And I think that is that's the way I think we should go. You know, don't deal with the corporate record companies any longer. And you know, the whole situation with internet radio is something that's going to grow and grow and grow. And you know, we can promote our things in South Africa, in Ghana, in Germany, in Holland, in just like on Facebook, I have friends from Sweden. I have friends from Germany. These are African people that I'm talking about. Friends from you know, the African continent, the Caribbean. So I think we have to use the new technology in order to promote our culture. And of course, PayPal and all of this, these sort of technologies, how you get paid, we have to be on top of that. But I just think we basically have to cut the middleman, who most of the time was a white man. But I know that you guys are not into the whole thing about you don't want to be exploited by somebody just because they're black. You know what I mean? So we want to get we want an egalitarian situation where we get paid. You know, so we don't want to be oppressed by white or black oppressors or Chinese oppressors or Indian oppressors. We want, you know, we basically want egalitarian situation where we can get everything we should get in terms of our money and our freedom.
I couldn't agree more. And my last question is just to ask you really quickly, you know, well, it's not my last question, but I hope that, you know, that you'll consider coming on the show again. I would love to have you on
periodically. Anytime. I like your work, so I would be appreciate it tremendously.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Is there any way, folks that are listening right now that want to build with you, that want to connect with you online, is there an email or is there a way they can get in contact with you and your work? Because I let folks know that, you know, that you also have hosted quite a few online radio shows, and I believe those are also archived, just like your articles on you know, Pan African Newswire with Abiomi Ezekwe. You were just recently on one of his internet-based radio shows. How can they get a hold of you, maybe to ask you for more information on music, to pick your brain, and maybe even to get you to send them some of the pieces that you've written before?
You can email me, Norman. .o.richmond, R-I-C-H-M-O-N-D, @gmail.com. That's Norman, N-O-R-M-A-N, .o.richmond, R-I-C-H-M-O-N-D, @gmail.com. And I'm on Facebook. You can friend me on Facebook, and I have a blog, and I can get the blog is being constructed. It's up there, but it's kind of problematic, and I can get, you know, there's a lot of my information on the blog, but if you email me or you do the Facebook situation, I like the Facebook situation because I can stay in contact with a lot of people. And I would like to say that, you know, that whole Facebook thing is can be used for technology, like Kwame Ture used to always say, can be used for good or bad, or, you know, if you're going to get on there on Facebook and talk about what you had for dinner, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But the state knows what you're doing anyway, so you don't just put any crazy stuff on Facebook. So I think we should use it. That's how I come down on that issue.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And I really, it means a lot to me that an elder African like yourself appreciates the work that we've been trying to do here at Your World News, and you know, your support, that, you know, literally it means the world to us. So thank you so much, brother.
All right, and keep up your good work, because I check your things out every time you post something.
Thank you so much. I'll be posting this episode of Your World News very soon, so you should get in your email.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank you, Norman.
Take care.
All right.
So, folks, that was Norman Richmond, and that was, you know, quite frankly, one of the priceless, you know, interviews that we've done. You know, you cannot, you know, place a price tag on that interview. in any shape, form, or fashion, because knowledge, you know, is priceless. Knowledge is priceless, and it should be priceless. Knowledge should not be kept, you know, in the halls and respiratories or repositories of these elitist, you know, academic institutions, you know, throughout the world. You know, it should be available free to the public, to the masses, to draw inspiration, to draw knowledge, to learn how they can better organize, because the more you learn about various issues, the more equipped you are to organize around tackling those issues. And so when the brother talks about, you know, connecting the music to liberation struggles, when he talks about his thoughts and perspectives on how, you know, African people can reclaim their music, you know, it says something, it means something, and it should. And you know, my hopes is that folks that are listening to this right now, if you can take this interview, take the link, and tweet it to all of these corporate rappers that you may or may not be supporting. Tweet it to them, post it on their Facebook pages, and tell them to listen. Because, you know, some of those brothers and sisters may not realize, some may realize, and some may just be capitalist, you know, strumpets, you know, and may be enjoying, you know, making themselves look like a fool, you know, like a monkey for white corporations. Maybe some, you know, the money is worth that. But others, you know, I'm convinced, have no idea. And it takes us, a community, us, those of you that are listening right now, as much as Tim or myself, it's not just myself, we all have something to learn from each other, those of us that are in these liberation struggles. But, you know, when we learn something new from somebody like a Norman Richmond, when you get something from a show like Your World News, take that and spread it to those that need it the most. I mean, spread it to everybody, but definitely spread it to those that need the most, because there may be that light there that is used to ignite, you know, a flame within them, to charge them to stop doing some of the mentally and physically destructive things that they're doing, and to have an about face and to press forward ever, backward never, as Kwame Nkrumah said, and to start being a part of something bigger than themselves, something that can make this world a much, much, much better place. So, Tim, what are your final thoughts?
I just couldn't agree more that, you know, the information is really where the power lies. And with that information can prepare you to action, you know, and actions are things that change things. So I couldn't agree more.
And what did you think about, you know, what are some of the things that you picked up from the interview?
Well, it was just great to see and put in perspective how, you know, music is just another one of those playing fields where white supremacy has caused basically the co-opting of African music, and how white supremacy really tries to infiltrate every single aspect of resistance, whether it's music, you know, economics, the criminal justice system or injustice system, the medical system. On every single front, white supremacy is trying to attack African resistance, and I think it was great to see how this interview really brought out how that's happening in the front of music as well.
Thank you. And so without further ado, I think we have the perfect song to end this episode with, and this is Dead Prez, Game is a Battlefield. I think this is the best. This is like, you know, one of the best songs I can think of that would be befitting this episode, and so this is dedicated to Norman Richmond. It's dedicated to all the freedom fighters who are home with the ancestors and are fighting to this day. You know, continue to use music as a tool. Without a doubt, Madiba, Nelson Mandela. As we know, Madiba was his, you know, was his clan name. You know, was inspired by music. Certainly was inspired by music, and so I think all freedom fighters in some shape, form, or fashion are inspired by music or the arts in general. So here is Dead Prez, Game is a Battlefield. Until next time, I'm Salman Kamajan for Tim Bodiff Lynchin. This is Your World News. Journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive.
This is a mockery of your number one station that's brainwashing the nation. playing the same old stereotypical musical as usual. With no balance or substance, cause you motherfuckers love it.
They scared of real hip hop, like the threat of war. The game is a battlefield, but it's not a metaphor, it's real life. You get drafted by the A&R, you get sworn in and join in to play your part like a soldier. With no choice, you are what they say you are. They use your voice to wage a war. They send you across lands and over airways. The video program is like an air raid. Women and children in the line of fire. Today rappers is like mercenaries, soldiers for hire. Dog tags is gold chains, slugs is rap, killing brown and black. Like campaigns in Iraq, minefields in the whack. If it don't blow up, you get a bayonet in your back. Back on the block like a vet in the wheelchair, no health care. The same way the rap gang did the first pioneers, it's a battlefield. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
The word is the bullet. Peter Tosh had an AK for a guitar. I'm Che, but my pen is my cigar. Urban Gorilla Griot, other side of the peephole. It's the war outside. I say, Flio, Dio, Smeo, is it real? Audio terror, this ain't a drill. Now your helmet is a new era. Fashionista, army apparel. Gun barrel, radio waves. Rapid return fire. Street call desire. It's the fall of the empire. Download your freedom using hi-fi, Wi-Fi. Five verse five. It's the media lie. Identify yourself, soldier. We ain't making classics no more. We getting over. Keep looking over your shoulder. Study the terrain. See, they watching the internet. They're studying your brain. And politics is war without guns. I said it before. Now they turn the battlefield into a dance floor. And it's hard to the core if you start to explore. It's hard to the core if you start to explore.
Motherfuckers are really listening. This would have never been really played on the radio. It's a takeover.